All right, glad you're with us. And write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. You know, a lot of people are asking me, oh, I don't know, I got a gut feeling. I mean, the left is energized. And I'm like, no, they're not. I don't see a Barack Obama wave like we saw in 07, 08. By the way, in spite of every effort I tried to inform people about how he was a rigid radical ideologue that would never change. He never had, you know, say what you will about Bill Clinton. He was a far better politician, I'm just politically speaking. He had better instincts, maybe being a Southern governor in the sense that he had at least an understanding of life outside the bubble of Washington, D.C. or a big city like New York or New Jersey or Illinois, California. He just had that. You look at the background of Obama, it was, you know, it was, let's see, Frank Marshall Davis indoctrination. It was Acorn. It was Acorn. It was Alinsky. It was community organizer. It was a couple of decades in the Church of GD America. It was Ayers and Dorn and Louis Farrakhan that they were able to hide from everybody. And I'm looking at this field of weak candidates, and there's nobody that I see that is advocating what or showing any inspiration to anybody. Now, I know what the plan is. The plan is just run against Trump. I'm not Trump. All right, that's Biden's plan. The other part of the plan is now they've got this other factor that has come in. They're now having to cater to the squad. They are now having to cater to the radical left-wing base. And what liberal, leftist, socialist, statist, you know, redistributionist, what they all have in common is a desire to play on the natural fears that people have, the normal stress of life that we all face. I mean, the bottom line is everybody feels it. Am I going to have enough money to retire? Will I always be able to afford my house or a place, nice place to live? Am I going to be able to afford the medical attention that I might need in my older age? Am I going to be able to have a decent retirement? You know, maybe take one or two vacations a year, go fishing in my backyard, play golf at the local golf club or whatever. That's all natural fears that people have. When politicians come along and they offer you everything for free, what they're trying to do is they're playing on an instinctive, natural fear of life that exists within us. Now, the great thing about capitalism is, and especially if the economy is booming like it is now, I mean, we have the best employment scenario in this country since 1969. It is not an accident that Donald Trump's policies have resulted in record low unemployment for varying demographic groups, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, women in the workplace, and youth unemployment. It's not by accident. When you end burdensome regulation, when you incentivize businesses and take away the regulations that are creating a chokehold on their ability to be competitive in a world marketplace, when you incentivize businesses to invest in factories and manufacturing centers the way the president has, and the biggest tax cuts in history on top of it all, well, the natural outcrop of that is going to be job creation, opportunity creation. And for all the people that are worried about, okay, can I afford a house, a nice house in a safe neighborhood, drive a decent car or truck, and will I be able to afford some amenities in life, maybe go out to dinner once a week, not at an extravagant restaurant, but maybe just the local place to get a little spaghetti and meatballs or whatever you want to get. And will I be able to send my kids to a good school? How are the schools in the neighborhood? Is it safe? Do I have to worry about crime? Do I have to worry about, you know, everybody has these worries. And it's when government comes in, you have politicians saying that they're going to take care of everything. You will have no more fear. What is the Green New Deal? The Green New Deal, this is what they promise you. You know, their broad, ambitious package of new policies, investments in communities and infrastructure and technology to help the U.S. achieve environmental sustainability and economic sustainability. Okay. James, I just wanted the summary, by the way, if somebody could tell James. I wasn't looking for this big document, which I'd never have time to be able to go through. Now, the Green New Deal is what it is. Everything we've been telling you about it is true. No oil or gas, the lifeblood of our economy is gone. Okay, that is going to, in and of itself, immediately end any competitiveness America has with the rest of the world. It will alter the means of production with a finality that will be felt instantaneously. America will literally descend almost immediately into an economy of poverty. When you tax people at a 70% top marginal rate, tax corporations, by the way, corporations don't pay taxes, people pay taxes. And that means that goods and services created by corporations, those goods and services, they're going to pass the cost on to the consumers, or they're just going to get out of business, or they're going to take their businesses overseas and they're going to go in a place that is more, go to a more business-friendly environment. That's what people are going to do. And you'll see this happen if this ever becomes a reality. Now, we've gone over this phenomenon of these liberal cities. We've been sending our correspondent at large friend, our friend Lawrence Jones, to these liberal cities, and we have been reporting why is, and asking the question, why is it in these cities that claim to have the monopoly of compassion on every demographic group, they say that they deserve voting for them, the ones that, remember, every year they're going to tell you Republicans, conservatives, Fox News, that Donald Trump is racist, sexist, misogynist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, that Republicans, they don't want to fix the environment because they want dirty air and dirty water. Those words actually came out of Obama's mouth once. That Republicans, they want old people. They don't care if old people eat cat food and dog food because eventually they're going to throw them over the cliff anyway.
That's my plan. And then you got their plan, which is let's have dirtier air, dirtier water, less people with health insurance. All right, so far at least, I feel better about my plan.
Keep your doctor, keep your plan, save money. Millions lose their doctors, lose their plans, and they all pay more for medical attention. Why is it that a mile away from Nancy Pelosi's gated community, how is it possible that there is in the streets drug addicts all over the place? How is it that people, there are needles that have been used that are all over the place?
When you have needles and blood-stained clothing in the streets, that can't be safe for anyone.
I do see like a lot of needles and then, you know, feces everywhere. And then that's obviously about drugs and stuff like that.
Kind of makes it a drab when you walk around, you see needles and close to a playground and just feces everywhere. I mean, the smell of it all, it's kind of...
You definitely have to look on the ground when you're walking. And it's definitely an uptick because I've lived in this city more than 30 years and this is probably the worst I've seen it.
This is 1 mile they are describing from Nancy Pelosi's gated community of rich people, you know, net worth. We looked it up. What was it? $30, $50 million. She's got a lot of money. I mean, if she was so compassionate, you would think she'd look a mile away from her home because this specific area in one direction, 1 mile away, is her office. And 1 mile in the other direction is her home. I'm sure she takes the scenic route around where the drug addicts, the needles, the urinating and the feces and people going to the bathroom in the streets are. I'm assuming she goes some other way than right through the middle of that. But you look at Los Angeles and the problems they are now having. How is that possible in, again, cities that have been run by compassionate liberals for decades and decades? That brings us to Baltimore. You know, what the Democrats now have been saying, Donald Trump is creating concentration camps at these detention centers. Well, Griff Jenkins went down and looked at one of the larger facilities. I saw his report the other day. And what do you see? People, They're getting food and medicine and water and beds and blankets and pillows and medical attention when they need it, baby formula, diapers. I saw soccer fields, guys playing soccer, recreational facilities, TVs, phones, and there's not any violence there. Not any. Now, it's not ideal. I don't want to be in a detention center, but the people are in the detention center because they didn't respect our laws, our sovereignty, our constitution, our borders, and so that's why they're there. And they're being detained in the process. But according to Ocasio-Cortez and Elijah Cummings, they're like concentration camps. No, they're not. The president called out Congressman Cummings for failing to address the dire problems in his home district, Baltimore. I love Baltimore. Well, when you look at the numbers of Baltimore, Elijah Cummings has been their congressman elected 13 times. That means this is his 25th year in office representing the people of Baltimore. And you've got literally poverty far worse than anything Griff Jenkins was able to show us. Corruption on a nearly unimaginable scale. Instead of focusing on deteriorating living conditions in Baltimore or San Francisco or Los Angeles or Chicago or New York, no, they're just out there defending Cummings. And the only reason the president said it is because he's a racist. Well, if the president points it out and let's say we're able to fix Baltimore, which I'd like to see, maybe it's the best thing President Trump ever did for the people of Baltimore. And he rightly called it dangerous, rightly said it was rat infested. The former mayor, Catherine Pune, said that she could smell the rats herself while mayor when she was walking through a neighborhood in East Baltimore.
About a year ago, city leaders identified some of the city's most violent neighborhoods.
What the hell? We should just take all this down.
To target.
Ooh, you can smell the rats.
Under Baltimore's violence reduction
smell
initiative.
Smell the rats. Ooh, Bernie Jesus. Sanders compared it to a third world country, and Obama, after the Freddie Gray incident and the violence broke out, he had comments about Baltimore, too. Nobody ever criticized Bernie Sanders. No one criticized Mayor Pune. Nobody criticized nobody criticized Obama. Listen to what they said.
And I think we have to give them credit. My understanding is you've got some of the same organizers now going back into these communities to try to clean up in the aftermath of a handful of protesters, a handful of criminals and thugs who tore up the place.
The fact of the matter is that America is the wealthiest country in the history of the world. But anyone who took the walk that we took around this neighborhood would not think you're in a wealthy nation. You would think that you were in a third world country. A community that does not even have decent quality grocery stores where moms can buy quality food for their kids. A community in which the dream of getting a higher education for many kids is as real as is going to the moon.
Well, you look at Baltimore, and the conditions are even worse than they were. I mean, the rodent infestation is so bad, they have a documentary entitled Rat Film highlighting the local government's failure in urban planning. And guess what? You have so many vacant buildings now because people are leaving Baltimore. It reminds me of Detroit a lot because it happened in Detroit. Nearly 17,000 abandoned structures in the city limits. City's educational system. This should not even be possible. In 2017, zero students in five Baltimore high schools and one middle school were proficient in math and reading. Zero. And at 13 high schools, you had zero students proficient in math. None. Zero. How is that even possible? You almost have to try to fail at that level. All right. And by the way, Obama gave $1.8 billion. What did they do with that money? It's unconscionable. And it's happening. It's a phenomenon. Liberal city failure. Socialist failure. Now they want to do it on a scale that will absolutely destroy the country. How is it possible? I mean, if all of this you have to see through the prism of what these Democratic hopefuls are now promising everybody. Because it's the same promises they've offered cities like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Baltimore, and others. You know, if you, in 2017, in five Baltimore high schools, you don't have a single kid proficient in both math and English. None. In the same year, 2017, 13 high schools had not one single solitary student proficient in math. You can't be successful in life without the basics and the fundamentals. Remember the story of Joe Clark, the movie Lean on Me? You know, he went into one of the worst high schools in New Jersey, and he was known for his bullhorn and his baseball bat. And in the end, he ended up saving the kids, saving the school, and getting these kids to study and pass the exams. It's not the kids' fault that they're not being given the proper education. That's our fault. That's liberal America's fault. Now you take this and you magnify and you put in the hands of all of these people that screwed up all of these liberal cities, and you're going to give them the power over every single aspect of your life as a way of taking away the natural fear that every human being has is, oh my gosh, can I afford a nice house, safe neighborhood, good schools, a car? It'll guarantee the opposite of what they're promising, because we see it. And we've got one scientific example after another called failed American cities. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. So see what I'm saying here through the prism of what the new extreme radical Democratic Socialist Party, where they want to take the country. I mean, they now have gotten Joe Biden to, I mean, he's so twisted up into a pretzel. I mean, this guy has been on every side of every issue forever. And the president saying earlier today thinks it's probably going to be Biden. Well, yeah, it is a phenomenon, though, isn't it? States run by the most liberal governors, cities run by the most liberal mayors, towns and cities run by the most liberal people. They're losing population in the tens of thousands every month. You know, California's lose. I love the analogy that Mike Huckabee used. In California, if you want to rent a U-Haul, it's four times what somebody that's rent. If you want to take that U-Haul to Texas, somebody from Texas taking the U-Haul back anywhere to California is doing U-Haul a favor, because the ratio of people leaving California for Texas is that dramatically in one direction. And you can't blame people in California. They don't want to pay a 13.5% income tax on top of the federal income tax that they pay, on top of the other fees and taxes and hidden taxes that they pay as well. You know, it's amazing, all these high tax liberal states that say they're going to give health care to illegal immigrants. Who's going to pay for that? That would be the taxpayers of California. New York, you got a 10% state income tax, a 3-4% city tax if you work in the city. You know, then you got a, 16% death tax if you die, just for New York, on top of the federal death tax. Just to die, after you've saved your money, after you pay taxes on your money, and maybe you want to leave your money to your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids, and maybe set them up for a little bit of an easier time in life than maybe you had. And you have the, no, you can't, because the government's going to come in, and depending on what state you live in my case, after I've been taxed to death, I live in the second highest property tax county in the country, Nassau County, only second to Westchester County, both in New York. And you get nothing for you, sir. I don't get anything. I get my lights being blown out every other week. In other words,
tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. We did. Now, God forbid the rich leave.
And don't forget, you know, every Democratic, and every 2020 Democratic hopeful wants to raise taxes. Some as high as 70%, top marginal rates for individuals, 90% for corporations. Then you've got the added wealth tax if you save too much money that people like Elizabeth Warren would want to put on you. You've got some version of the Green New Deal. You've got some version of cradle to grave, womb to the tomb, no fear in life. You know, a plan that is going to take away and solve every problem you have. The only problem is that the cities and the states that have been experimenting with these policies and this type of politics for so long are the cities and the states that are losing population. California, you see a mass exodus going to states like Texas. The problem is The people that are liberal in California are leaving for the reasons I just mentioned, the high taxes, the burdensome regulation, the difficulty even building one single house out in California. And they go into Texas and they take the liberal policies with them. That means they're going to destroy the next state that they go to. Well, it'll be incremental, but they'll still get there. People leaving Illinois, Chicago in particular, in droves. People are leaving New York and New Jersey because of regulation, high taxes. They've had it. And they're looking at states like Tennessee and Texas and Florida and the Carolinas. In the case of Tennessee and Florida and Texas, there's no state income tax. They have much lower property tax rates. They have far better infrastructure on top of it all. Far better opportunities in these states. You know, how I don't understand how this can happen where the mayor of Baltimore, you know, wasn't that long ago, she's now no longer the mayor, is talking about the vermin, the rats that are all over the place. You've got 17,000 abandoned structures in the city limits. You want to see what liberal policies do to a city? Go to the once great city of Detroit. Now, they're trying to make a comeback, but it's not going that great yet. Hopefully it will. I'd love to see the reemergence of Detroit. You know, it blows my mind that you have five high schools in Baltimore where not one kid, not one, is proficient in both math and English. Not a single student. How is that possible? How do you fail on that spectacular a level? And then they have 13 high schools that don't have one single kid, not one student proficient in math. How does that happen? That is, we have failed those kids on a spectacular level. You know, how is it a mile from Nancy Pelosi's home that you've got people shooting up all over the place in the streets, disposing their needles everywhere in the streets? They have no place to go to the bathroom. They're urinating and defecating in the streets. And the people there are saying, you know, the feces smell is just too much to bear. How can that happen when a mile away her office is? And a mile in the other direction her multi-million dollar home is? Estimated net worth, $30 million. Maybe she could give $1 million of that and incentivize the other rich people in the gated community in which she's living. Maybe they can donate $100,000 or $500,000. Maybe then they can get enough money, build a shelter, you know, where people have a place to go to the bathroom, take a shower, maybe offer a little drug counseling. And it doesn't have to be an extravagant meal, but maybe soup, bread, water, cereal for breakfast, something. And maybe just bread and toast and butter and little jelly. I don't know, coffee. It's unbelievable. I guess liberals are only generous with other people's money. I mean, they're out there promising the world to us. Look at Baltimore again. Unemployment rate is the third highest of any major city in America. They, too, have lost a couple of 100,000 people in terms of their population, which is why you have 17,000 empty buildings. In Baltimore, the poverty rate's a whopping 22%. In Baltimore, household median income is 11,000 less than the national average. You know, the dire issue in Baltimore is violent crime. Baltimore named the most dangerous big city in America. And by the way, people were murdered in Baltimore more than ever before. They're setting records in murders. Per capita, there were more than twice as many shootings in Baltimore than Chicago. We've heard a lot about Chicago. And by the way, nobody's ever fixed that problem. Rom Rombo Deadfish, he didn't fix it. 2018, the city's murder rate was higher than in the county. In Baltimore, it was their murder rate was higher than in the entire country of Honduras. You know, the people from Honduras that are literally fleeing to seek asylum coming from Honduras to America. My advice, don't go to Baltimore because it's going to be worse from which you that which you came from. This year, Baltimore's murder rate is on the rise again. Already a 16% increase in the number of murders, 28% increase in non-fatal shootings. By the way, this as the population continues to decrease. Baltimore is now seeing a massive decrease in their population as a result, losing nearly 300,000 in the last couple of decades. That's a lot in a city like Baltimore. As the New York Times called it, the tragedy of Baltimore. Without a doubt, we're witnessing a human crisis. You would think we can do better. This is a city run by liberal Democrats. This is a city where Congressman Elijah Cummings has been in Washington for 23 years. I think maybe 24, 13. Yeah, I think he's in his 25th year now. His district is one of the, it's become worse and worse and worse. And he's criticizing the president on the detention centers. We don't have these problems in the detention centers that people are describing. We don't have a full grasp on it yet, but we're trying. I know the squad and other liberal Democrats, they didn't want to pay for it. And violent crime, homelessness, drug addiction, poverty, they're wreaking havoc in all of these cities that have been run by liberal Democrats for decades. What are they doing with the money we give them? And by the way, add to that $1.8 billion in Obama stimulus funds. How is that even possible? You know, since Friday in Baltimore, 13 people shot, 6 people killed, 19-year-old killed, 17-year-old shot blocks away from a quadruple shooting 1 week earlier. I mean, you have women, you know, holding a 5-week-old, woman holding a 5-week-old baby, robbed at gunpoint. A video emerged in Baltimore showing a city employee getting viciously beaten and robbed by a group of individuals on electric scooters. Even the new deputy police commissioner and his wife were robbed at gunpoint. Talk about crisis and the corruption. The far left government, they're not up to the task. Two of the past 3 mayors forced out, resigning over corruption scandals. The other, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, presided over the 2015 riots in Baltimore, where the city was set ablaze, stores were looted, cars flipped, chaos descending, anarchy descending on the city. And by the way, we never took the videotapes of the people that did it and held them accountable. Why do we never do that? Obama gave them $1.8 billion in stimulus funds. What did they do with it? I know they earmarked $206 million on the environment. But my point is, this is what these 2020 candidates want to do. This is what they want to do to America. This is what their Green New Deal is. What they have done with every example I give you, they want to do it nationally. And then every single 2020 Democratic hopeful is bought into some version of this. Yeah, banning the lifeblood of our economy. Oil and gas and nuclear energy. Eliminating, you know, cars as we know them with combustion engines. We're all going to drive, well, I don't know, maybe we'll cycle to work every day. We're going to retrofit and rebuild every building in America. Who's going to pay for that? We're going to eventually eliminate air travel. Well, how do we get to Asia? How do we get to Europe? We're going to take a boat? We're going to paddle on over to Great Britain? How are we going to get there? Good luck with that. And then, of course, you get, what do you get? You get a government-guaranteed job. You get free education from the day you're born to the day you die, guaranteed. You get a guaranteed healthy government diet, healthy food guaranteed to every American. You get guaranteed safe, affordable, adequate housing. You get guaranteed money. In other words, they say economic security, whether you're willing or unwilling to work. And then they'll even ban meat if given the opportunity. As Ocasio-Cortez says, well, we got to stop eating hamburgers for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'd love to eat hamburgers for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I just don't know anybody that does eat hamburgers for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, unless you're on some crazy diet. Anyway, zero green. This is what they're planning. They want it. This and even the chief of staff for Ocasio-Cortez. Oh, this was never about climate change. It just evolved into that. Once, by the way, we found out, Daily Caller, 2018, February, that Elijah Cummings attended a secret meeting with Louis Farrakhan. President Trump criticized Elijah Cummings over the weekend, and Cummings and the fake fraud media mob were outraged. Didn't matter that Cummings had, you know, said the same thing to Trump just days before, but it turns out that several years ago, Congressman Cummings attended a secret meeting with the number one racist anti-Semite in the country, Screwy Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam. And he was called on to denounce Farrakhan last year, and he wouldn't do it. 21 members of the Congressional Black Caucus are facing questions about their ties to Nation of Islam chief Louis Farrakhan. They've all refused to condemn the hate group leader. Congressional Black Caucus held a secret meeting with Farrakhan, but hid it from the public to avoid controversy, just like Obama hid his picture with Farrakhan to avoid controversy. This is what these 2020 Democrats are offering you, the country, and it sounds great on paper. You have no more fear. They're going to guarantee housing, guarantee education, guarantee job, guaranteed health care, guaranteed retirement, guaranteed healthy food, guaranteed, guaranteed, guaranteed. How are you going to pay for it? They've also guaranteed good schools. Well, I just gave you the statistics in one city alone. They're going to guarantee safety because I gave you the statistics of all these liberal cities. Are they going to guarantee health care? What happened to keep your doctor, keep your plan, and save money? Millions lost their doctors, millions lost their plans, and everybody paid more. By the way, according to one estimate that has just come out, swing state households are going to lose at least $70,000 within the first year of this Green New Deal of theirs. That was put out by the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Great. Kamala Harris, Ocasio-Cortez team up for their Green New Deal bill for the poor. How are they going to get the money? Well, Congresswoman Tlaib told us. We'll play it. This is her saying, well, we're going to give it to the people that deserve it. We're going to take it from the rich and give it to the people that earned it. She said this. Do we have that? Maybe we don't have that.
I introduced the Boost Act. This legislation completely repeals the GOP tax scam that is only helping wealthy individuals, the rich, the corporations. And do you know what I did with that money? Do you know what I said? Mm-mm. We're going to go ahead and put it into the pockets of folks like everyday Americans. If you make less than $100,000, you're going to get up to $6,000 in your pocket. And if you make less than $50,000, you're going to get $3,000. That's what we do with our public dollars. We give it back to the people that earned it.
Yeah, we'll give it back to the people that earned it. Okay.
Do you believe, Director Ray, that the FBI and its agents spied into the 2016 presidential campaign operation?
Well, again, I want to be careful about how I answer that question here because there is an ongoing Inspector General investigation. I have my own thoughts based on limited information I've seen so far, but I don't think it would be ripe or appropriate for me to share those at this stage.
And at this time, do you have any evidence that any illegal surveillance into the campaigns or individuals associated with the campaigns by the FBI occurred?
I don't think I personally have any evidence of that sort.
Have you initiated any internal reviews of the FBI's action during the 2016 election?
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are a couple things going on. First, there is, of course, the ongoing Inspector General's investigation that's being conducted by the Independent Office of Inspector General, and our folks are assisting them with their effort. And then second, as you alluded to, now that the special counsel investigation is completed and having only recently returned to the department, the Attorney General is seeking to understand better the circumstances at the department and the FBI relating to how this investigation started. And we're working to help him get that understanding. I think that's part of his job and part of mine.
Well, we've learned in the last month that there was information that the number two person in the European Affairs Department of the State Department, and if you recall, we've long been looking at the State Department, looking for any information the State Department had on Christopher Steele or anything involved in this Russia hoax. So that information, we now know that the government had that in 2016. So the State Department, in October of 2016, emails went to the FBI saying things like that Christopher Steele was not believable, that he wanted to bring this out before the election. That should be a big red flag. Also said that this so-called Russia hoax, the operation against Trump, or with Trump, that Trump was a part of, was being run out of the Russian consulate in Miami. Well, it ends up, guess what? There is no Russian consulate in Miami. So this number two person at the State Department named Kavalek, she informed the FBI of these concerns. Now, why is that important? It's important for a number of reasons, but first and foremost, the FISA court should have had this. The FBI had it. The FISA court should have had it before they went and spied on the Trump campaign by getting a warrant on Carter Page. Another reason why this is important for the FBI is because the Congress, under the Republican control last time, asked for anything and everything on Christopher Steele. Clearly, if we would have had this 2.5 years ago when we started this investigation, we would be in a much different place today than we are.
Yeah.
So, because this is clearly obstructing a congressional investigation. So someone at the FBI determined to hide this information, not provide it to the court, and what I'm concerned about is not provide it to the U.S. Congress. So they have till Friday to get it to us, and if they don't, we will make our 9th criminal referral. Basically, we won't know exactly who at the FBI obstructed justice, but some Durham or the Department of Justice should be able to figure it out, because there's emails that went around and somebody decided not to give it to the Congress.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Glad you're with us as we continue our investigation into the investigators. What you heard there is pretty fascinating to me. Christopher Wray, no evidence of any illegal surveillance into any campaign in 2016. Let's see. He said that in May. How is that even possible? How did he not know? And then say, working with Attorney General Barr to understand how the Trump investigation got started. You know, I've been watching Christopher Wray with some, I just watch him and I'm like, why aren't you getting this? And I'm beginning to think when I hear stuff like that, that he is, you know, a swamp, D.C. swamp person, and I don't get it. Devin Nunes was on with Maria Bartiromo and, you know, pointed out they sent a letter to the FBI Director Wray asking who withheld information about Christopher Steele, and there's a lot of it that we have since discovered. You heard Nunes mentioning Kathleen Kavalec 2 weeks before the first FISA application signed by Comey, then director, in October of 2016. She warned everybody at the DOJ and FBI specifically that Christopher Steele had a political agenda. This is not the first warning that the FBI and DOJ had. So it's getting interesting from that standpoint. And now we have John Solomon's new article out today, which I think is beginning to blow this whole question wide open. And it says, Christopher Wray's FBI continues to cover for Team Comey's Russian shenanigans. Well, if he's not willing to do the job, then he can leave now. Because getting the premier organization, law enforcement organization, right matters. And the FBI is going to court to fight the public release of a small number of documents that the State Department sent to agents from Christopher Steele, the British intel operative. Hillary Clinton paid, you know, political mudraker. I mean, Christopher Steele's at the heart of all of this. Thankfully, John Durham actually got 16 hours with the guy. We already knew from his past testimony that he claims none of the dossier was true that he could confirm. We also know that the FBI had their own spreadsheet, and their spreadsheet said, no, none of this pretty much is true either. Over 90% of it's not true. We can prove it's not true. Quote, we know what a terrorist organization and other hostile or foreign intelligence groups have the capacity and ability to gather information from a myriad of sources and analyze it and deduce means and methods from disparate details to defeat the U.S. Government's collection efforts. An FBI section chief sworn in an affidavit supporting the request to keep the document secret. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. And on top of all of this, we have a newly released transcript of Comey's official private testimony. And in the case of James Rubicki, who served as the chief of staff to Director Comey, you know, he's saying the Russian conspiracy came from the Obama White House and nobody seems to be paying attention to. And he's pretty much suggested in sworn testimony that Trump-Russia collusion, that investigation was orchestrated right from the Obama White House in October 2016. And there are newly released Bureau documents that go into this. He got a heavily redacted transcript of Rubicki's interview with the U.S. Office of Special Counsel. And it includes an unidentified prosecutor's summary of the former FBI official's testimony, quote, "So we understand," the prosecutor says, "that at some point in October 2016, there was, I guess, a desire by the White House," that would be Obama's White House, "to make some kind of statement about Russia's." The next page is then omitted. And the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, not to be confused with Mueller's Special Counsel, is a permanent, independent, federal investigative prosecutorial agency designed to protect federal employees from any reprisal or whistleblowing laws that exist for this very purpose. John Solomon is with us now. Now, I guess at some point we've been so busy with so many other things that have been breaking. Well, Director Wray has kind of stayed out of the fray. What we're now finding out, he's not doing a darn thing to clean anything up.
Yeah, listen, let's take a look at some of the things that are on the public record and then what we broke today. First, since 2017, Senate Judiciary Committee under Chuck Grassley and now Lindsey Graham have sent more than a half dozen requests for information to the FBI, and they got crickets back. And these are serious things like, when did you know that Steele had a political bias? When did you know that Steele had given bad information? Really important issues that go to the trust and core competency of the FBI in this Russia investigation. Chris Wray has not allowed his FBI to respond in enough detail to satisfy those requests. We know that he stepped on Attorney General Barr's assessment that what the FBI did to Donald Trump essentially was spying, and he said, "I wouldn't call it that." So he undercut his own boss, even though all of us who've worked in the news media for years knows what spying is. When you pose as somebody else like Osra Turk did, and you extract information from a person and send that to the U.S. government, that's a form of spying. You can't call it anything but spying. So those are a couple of things that he did up to this point. And of course, he drove the House Intelligence Committee all the way to the brink of a lawsuit and going to court in a subpoena before he would give them what is known as the Gang of Eight material, which identified for the first time last summer of 18, 2 years after the investigation began, real evidence of wrongdoing by the FBI in the Russia case. So that's everything we know to this point. Now let me tell you what we know new today. The FBI is going to court tomorrow to try to block the release of the remaining documents from the story I broke a few months ago involving the Kathleen Cavillac memos. In that, there's a document. It's so unsecret. I know exactly what's in the document. Kathleen Cavillac gets some information about from Christopher Steele about this crazy theory about Alpha Bank being a secret communication point between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. It's been knocked down, even though it's been reported incessantly by CNN and Slate and MSNBC and all the tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists there. The FBI knocked it down, and Robert Mueller last week in his testimony said, "This did not happen. It's not true." She gets a copy of this theory from Christopher Steele on October 16, before the FISA warrants issued.
All right, hang on. This is about 10 to 14 days before Comey signs the first FISA warrant.
So
now,
I
just want to set the table so people understand.
Yeah.
Comey had already been, as all top upper echelon FBI rank and file at the top were warned, as was the DOJ, their top officials warned by Bruce Orr, and that was August 2016. He testified in a closed door session that all of that happened, warned about the dirty dossier. Hillary paid for it. Steele hates Donald Trump, and none of it's verified. Now, Cavillac comes in as a State Department official, you know, about 2 weeks prior to the first FISA application going before the FISA court, and says, this guy's on a political witch hunt. He's got an agenda. She does the right thing. I don't know what her politics are, but she warns the FBI again about Steele, because Steele had no business being at the State Department giving this information and demanding, you know, telling her that he had a deadline, and the deadline was Election Day.
Yeah.
And she gave a full, complete warning. What else did she tell them?
Well, she marks up this theory. So Christopher Steele has this theory that a lot of liberals were banting about in the election about the Alpha Bank server. And she marks it up with little notations. Whether it's her commentary or other State Department officials, it's clearly the State Department's comments about this theory. And she knocks it down as being silly, unprovable, really raising doubts about the credibility of Steele's treating this as a serious intelligence matter. She sends that to the section chief, a co-equal to Pete Stroke, at the FBI, her contact at the FBI, a guy named Stephen Laycock, who today is now the assistant director, a top senior official, and nothing happens. Now, under normal human source reporting rules, this would be considered derogatory information about a source. He's falling too deep into a weird theory. He's not a good source. Let's be cautious of him. That information is not, even though it goes to the FBI, it's not conveyed to the FISA court on either any of the four, including the one that was filed on October 21st, 8 days after Kavalak sends this warning to the FBI. Why would the FBI try to hide that now, right? Well, because it's going to show that they had derogatory information they didn't share to the court. But let me tell you how the FBI is trying to hide this. They're going to court trying to equate this document, which I was able to get, right, information on. It was sent on non-classified emails back in 2016, so nobody thought it was classified then. They're going into court arguing this is like the most important secret. It's like helping terrorist organizations if we give this up. It'll jeopardize all of our foreign intelligence relations across the court, across the world. This really, really dramatic, overstated concerns. But here's my favorite one. The third argument that they make is that the FBI and its agents should enjoy a privacy right. They have privacy interests from having to face questioning from the American public.
Excuse
about
the conduct. Me. They have a transparency obligation, especially if it comes to questions of the methods and whether or not the methods that they're using are legal and whether or not they're committing a premeditated fraud on a FISA court for the purposes of influencing an election and spying on a presidential candidate, even after being warned that the material is false and then purposefully committing the fraud on the court not once but four separate times.
You and I know that, right? The American taxpayer knows that because we pay these agents' salaries. But here is what Chris Wray's FBI is trying to argue to the court. Quote.
Well, just hang FBI, on. Hold that thought on Christopher Wray and what he's doing and why he's running interference now for Comey and Company. John Solomon is with us, 800-941-SEAN. We'll get into the Elijah Cummings, Al Sharpton battle against President Trump, which is not working out very well because of the horrific track record in Baltimore and how terrible the conditions for people there are. All right, you're coming on Hannity tonight. We're going to get into this deeper. Tell everybody what else is coming this week. You have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there could be some, there's a discussion of releasing some of the first declassified documents. I think that's slowing down. I think the DNI transfer may have slowed that down. But I think the more we're going to dig into the FBI, the more we're going to learn how much there's a cover-up going on and how much they're thwarting their own administration. Donald Trump, Attorney General Barr are being thwarted at getting at the truth. And I think this lawsuit that we just talked about gets right to that issue.
All right, John Solomon, investigative reporter. We'll see you tonight, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. How is it possible that so many liberal cities, let's look at the case of what's been going on in Baltimore, that or Los Angeles or San Francisco, all these cities are in a disastrous state run by Democrats, and then they lash out at Donald Trump for pointing out what even other Democrats point out. You can't make it up. C.L. Bryant up next. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue.
When you look at Baltimore and everything that's happening, would it be safe to say that Baltimore is in a crisis?
Wow. Yes, I would honestly say yes. You know, from the drug selling to the killings, you know, the poverty, you know, it's just crazy.
What do you see when you see Baltimore? Poverty, crime. What do you see?
I see poverty, crime. I see crime. I see crime as a way of life.
I personally don't even want to live in Baltimore anymore, and I'm afraid to actually raise a family here. And this is my home.
The crisis is not just the crime, but the crisis starts downtown with the government.
Tell me about your leaders here, right?
Leaders?
Yeah, your elected officials. What are they doing?
I think they bought, they sold out.
When you look at Baltimore, describe what do you see? The boarded houses, drugs. Tell me what you see.
I just see a city going wrong, the wrong way, because I grew up, I've been here 58 years, and it was such an honor, pleasure to live here. And what I see now, something I just drive through, and I'm almost in tears of what it has become.
I love Baltimore, but Baltimore is like a sewage right now. You know, the president called our city rat infested. That is true.
It is bringing great attention. It has brought attention so much so to the president. So that tells you something right there.
And I think we have to give them credit. My understanding is you've got some of the same organizers now going back into these communities to try to clean up in the aftermath of a handful of protesters, a handful of criminals and thugs who tore up the place.
About a year ago, city leaders identified some of the city's most violent neighborhoods.
What the hell? We should just take all this down.
To target.
Ooh, you can smell the rats.
Under Baltimore's Violence Reduction Initiative.
Ooh, Jesus.
Just last week, we went with Mayor Pugh as she toured an East Baltimore neighborhood.
Oh my God, you can smell the dead animals.
Blocks of dilapidated buildings help to hide the addiction that's crippled this community.
The homeless boarded up, they'll still break it down and do their drugs inside.
All right, that was the mayor of Baltimore, previous mayor, talking about, oh, the rats, the smell, the vermin. That was Obama after the Freddie Gray, well, riots happened. And then, of course, we've got socialist Bernie Sanders comparing Baltimore to a third world country. And nobody ever complained when Obama said it. The mayor of Baltimore said it, or socialist Democrat Bernie Sanders said, well, this.
The fact of the matter is that America is the wealthiest country in the history of the world. But anyone who took the walk that we took around this neighborhood would not think you're in a wealthy nation. You would think that you were in a third world country. A community that does not even have decent quality grocery stores where moms can buy quality food for their kids. A community in which the dream of getting a higher education for many kids is as real as is going to the moon.
Why is there a difference? Now, we've gone over the numbers rather extensively. I'll give you a few of them just so you understand. I mean, remember the context here. You have Democrats now comparing Donald Trump and what Donald Trump has been doing in terms of, all right, what are we supposed to do when all these hundreds of thousands of people are crossing into our country illegally and not respecting our laws, our Constitution, our sovereignty, our borders? All right, well, Griff Jenkins went down there. Griff Jenkins showed one of the biggest facilities, detention centers, and no, it's not like Auschwitz. It's not like a Nazi concentration camp. You have soccer fields. You have other recreational opportunities, a lot of freedom for the people that are in those detention centers as they await the time which they should probably be deported unless they get a liberal judge which says, no, stay. Laws don't matter. Constitution doesn't matter. But what else do they have? They have food, water, medicine, supplies, medical attention. They have for kids, they have blankets. They, well, for everybody, they have cots and blankets and pillows and as comfortable a standard of living as you can give, considering people didn't break the law. They have baby formula. They have diapers. They have other medical attention for younger kids, and they're taking care of everybody to the best we can. Now, the squad, they voted against the monies that would improve the detention centers. One thing they are not, though, well, it's certainly not Baltimore, and it's not Chicago. Now, instead of focusing on real problems, real death, real violence, real drugs, real poverty in a lot of the home districts of many of these Democrats, like Pelosi. Let's see, we have a mile away from her house, a mile away from her office in the other direction. Let's see, we have drug addicts galore. We have needles littering the streets everywhere. We have people urinating and defecating in the streets because there's no place for them to go. They have this a smell of feces problem. They have, obviously, hygiene issues associated with it. And you look at, let's see, the city of Baltimore. Well, the conditions have gotten dramatically worse over the years, in spite of the fact that Obama gave $1.8 billion in stimulus funds just to the city of Baltimore. Now, $207 million of the $1.8 billion was purposely set aside for climate issues in Baltimore. Now, people can't live in a safe neighborhood, but we're going to take care of climate issues in Baltimore. You have vacant buildings lining many of the streets, nearly 17,000 abandoned structures inside Baltimore city limits. I'm not making this up. A 2017 investigation. Let's look at their educational system. They have not one student, not a single student in five Baltimore high schools and one middle school that was proficient in math and English. Not one. Well, we're failing those kids. That's our treasure. That's our family. And they're failing miserably. And we're not doing a damn thing to help them. What did they do with the $1.8 billion? We could have hired tutors for every kid, for crying out loud. 13 high schools had zero students, zero, none, proficient in math. What have the Democrats done? Why are they allowing Los Angeles to descend into poverty and tent cities and chaos and misery? I thought they're so compassionate, Mr. Newsom, out there in California land. Their unemployment rate in Baltimore is the third highest of any major city in America. Poverty rate is a whopping 22%. Household median income, $11,000 less than the national average. The most dire issues in Baltimore is violent crime. Baltimore is the most dangerous big city in America, even more so than even Chicago. More people were murdered in Baltimore than ever before in just the last year per capita. More than twice as many shootings in Baltimore than Chicago. 2018, the city's murder rate higher than in the country of Honduras. And I'm not making that up either. Citizens are literally fleeing to seek asylum at the U.S. border from Honduras. They're not going to want to go to Baltimore, I can tell you that, because it's worse than where they came from. And through the first half of 2019, a 16% increase in the number of murders, 28% increase in the number of non-fatal shootings. Baltimore, obviously, they're losing population. Who would want to stay there? Well, New York Times even called it the tragedy of Baltimore. But Donald Trump can't say it. Donald Trump says it. It must be racism. Anyway, the Reverend C.L. Bryant is with us, author of The Race for Freedom, senior fellow at Freedom Works. He's been up close and personal in Baltimore, in the very district where Elijah Cummings is the elected congressman now, and is what, elected 13 times his 25th year. And then you have the mayor, former mayor, saying, whoa, you can smell the rats. I guess it's okay if that mayor says it. It's okay for what Obama says. It's okay what Bernie says. But if Trump says it, C.L. Bryant, I guess somehow that must be racist.
Sean, great to be with you and glad to be back on. Let me tell you, it's not Donald Trump who's a racist here. Donald Trump has not been the person who has used and abused black people in Baltimore for 26 years. It's been people like Al Sharpton and the representative there, Elijah Cummings, who has, in fact, abused them. Is it racist in this country now to hold accountable an elected official who is responsible for the funds that come from the federal government that don't reach or help the people? Is it racist to call them irresponsible and also ineffective? That's exactly what has happened in Baltimore. They have had elected officials who have failed them. And right now, it is time for all of us to call them out and, of course, make people understand that it is time to wake up to the old okey-doke that has been going on and the game that has been played on black people by elected officials like Elijah Cummings. And it's time for all of us to do away with this racist rhetoric that is absolutely sickening the entire political process that's going on in this country at this
Why
point
is
time,
this Sean? Happening in all of these liberal cities now that for decades have been run by liberal Democrats? I mean, it's specifically happening in those cities, San Francisco, Baltimore, Los Angeles, Chicago. Why?
Because they have been made sheep. Their rights that are given to them by the founding documents of this nation, the great endowment that we have, is being stolen from them through the lies that have been told them by the Pied Pipers in the Democrat Party. The Progressive Liberal Party has made black people and people of so-called color in this country sheep. And they have led them astray. When the shepherd of these people are actually being led astray and on the take, the president was not wrong when he said that something has happened to that money. It's either been stolen or it's been wasted. Now, it's not racist to ask for accountability of that. But the people themselves are waking up, Sean, and they know that they can look around them. They can look around them and tell that something's not right with this picture. And so They have been led as sheep astray, as the Bible tells us, that all these have been led astray as sheep, and they have turned to their own way. And when we talk about what Jesus was saying in that particular passage of Scripture, he wasn't being complimentary of the human race. He was saying that those people are stupid and being led astray the way that they have been led, and now they're in need of a shepherd. And I got to tell you, this president, as far as the unemployment rate is concerned, as far as joblessness rate in this country is concerned, has been a very good shepherd of our American economy. But the progressive liberals would like those sheep to think that somehow it's racist to call out a legislator who has brought them to the point where they are.
How do you measure? Because everything politically, CL, is measured in demographics, right? All right. Historically, and I don't know why, because if you look at the history, which I've laid out, and the party that Lyndon Johnson needed to pass the historic Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, was the Republican Party. Those are two historic pieces of legislation. You have Hillary, you know, saying that her mentor is the former Klansman Robert Byrd. Bill Clinton, his mentor was J. William Fulbright, also a segregationist. And I'm trying to understand that disproportionately under Obama-Biden policies, it impacted African Americans and minorities the most, negatively impacted. Under Trump, those that have been most positively impacted by deregulation, lower taxes, energy independence, that would be African Americans. They have record low unemployment, Hispanic Americans, women in the workplace, youth unemployment. Now, the question is, will people begin to see a shift in voting patterns? Because you know every election season, it's always going to be any conservative, any Republican is racist, sexist, homophobic, misogynistic, xenophobic, Islamophobic. They want dirty air, water. They want children to die, grandma and grandpa to eat cat food and dog food, and then throw them over the cliff anyway.
When you see what's happening in the DCCC, Sean, you are seeing absolute chaos happening in the Democrat Party as quietly as it is kept. I believe that there is going to be such a shock to the political system in 2020 that we will not even believe it ourselves, Sean Hannity. I am telling you, there is an awakening going on in the black community now. The pain that they have experienced over these last 60 years is actually coming to a point where there is an awakening that is going on. And there is going to be such a shock at the landscape. If we stay the course as conservatives, the landslide that Donald John Trump is going to experience in this country, that it will absolutely take the breath away from progressive liberalism and steal the heart out of their message altogether. The debates that may be coming up, that are coming up here tonight, all you're going to hear is blame Trump, or blame someone else. It's not our fault that this is happening. Well, I'm here to tell the progressive liberal Democrats that it is their fault, and the chickens are coming home to roost, and everyone is going to make them pay that haven't been making them pay over a period of time. I think you're going to see a draining away of at least 25 to 30% of the black vote for Trump in this 2020 election. It will be mammoth, believe me.
All right, appreciate it. C.L. Bryant, pastor, author of The Race for Freedom, senior fellow at FreedomWorks. Sir, thank you. When we come back, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour on The Sean Hannity Show.
Coming up next, our final News Roundup and Information Overload Hour.
They're coming for it. Our money. Money that belongs to us, that our families depend on. But socialists in Congress have a scheme to take our money and use it to pay for their political campaigns, even personal expenses and negative TV ads. Up to $5 million for every candidate, every election. And every House Democrat supported it. This isn't the old Democratic Party. It's a new radical socialist party. Their self-serving plan could cost us billions. Money that won't be spent to educate our kids, care for our our veterans or fix our crumbling roads and bridges. They're assaulting not just our money, but our way of life. Call this plan what it is, theft. But there's time to fight back. Call the Democrats. Tell them to fund their own campaigns and put the people first. NRCC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Well, I like the ad. Glad you're with us. News Roundup, Information Overload Hour on the Sean Hannity Show. So you got this next debate coming up. By the way, there's been a study that has come out as it relates to the new Green Deal. Now, it's not Pelosi, it's not Schumer that are having any influence on the 2020 presidential hopefuls. No, that would be the squad. Ocasio-Cortez and Tlaib and Congresswoman Omar. Anyway, swing state households would lose at least $70,000 within the first year of the Green New Deal. Wow. Okay, now think about it. If you have to retrofit your home to be, quote, up to energy standards of the climate control crazy left, that's going to cost a lot of money. If everything's going to be free, well, that's going to cost a lot of money. And if that means that you're going to pay for pre-K and nursery school and college and trade schools and guaranteed jobs for everybody and guaranteed government vacations and government healthy food and free retirement guaranteed and pretty much everything, medical care, Medicare for all and everything in between. Well, if you're going to have all that, who's going to pay for all of that? Now, I believe it was Congresswoman Tlaib that actually said, well, we're going to take money from the rich people and give it back to the people that deserve it. Forget if people are rich or poor. How about the people that worked for the money? How about the people that took the risks with whatever money they had and were fortunate enough to build a business? Remember, all business is based on goods and services created and sold to people that want, need, and desire those goods or services. You don't just make money because you say, oh, I'm going to snap my fingers and I'm going to make money. You've got to, in some capacity, you're producing goods or services for other people. That's how you make money. And people have to want, need, and desire those things. But I see now Kamala Harris has teamed up with AOC on the Green New Deal and a bill for poor people. That means confiscation, redistribution. Joe Biden has bought into some version of the Green New Deal, but that also means the elimination of oil and gas and the combustion engine, and everything's free. And we're going to raise the top marginal rates to 70% and top corporate rate to 90%. And we're not going to be a net exporter of energy any longer. We'll be energy dependent again. But in 10 years, we won't be using oil and gas. I don't know. I guess we'll be using our bicycles to go, you know, to coast to coast. You got to get to California the fastest way possible. Get on a bicycle. You need to go to Europe. Well, get a little sailboat. Paddle out and see how long it takes for you to get there. Anyway, joining us now, Kayleigh McEnany, National Press Secretary for Trump 2020, and Jeff Lord, the author of the bestseller Swamp Wars, Donald Trump and the New American Populism versus the Old Order. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
All right. So, I mean, how does this work? If they all now are influenced by the squad, they won't criticize the virulent anti-Semitism of the squad. They won't ask a tough question of how we're going to pay for all this from the squad. But they're all afraid of the squad. Nancy Pelosi dare not take on the squad. Her speakership is hanging in the balance. You basically never hear a negative word out of Chuckie Schumer about the squad. Not one 2020 presidential hopeful on the Democratic side is listening to anybody else but the people in the squad.
Yeah, you know, Sean, I have to laugh. You know, I'm sure you've seen this letter that Rahm Emanuel has put out. And it's very clear that you know, establishment Democrats are starting to panic here, precisely because of the squad, precisely because of the things that you're talking about, not to mention Twitter. And the notion that all of these people on this stage tonight are going to really, you know, pitch their message to that is driving some of these people crazy. And I have to say, it just makes me sit back and laugh.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm watching this, and I got to tell you something. I agree. Now, the memo of which you refer was in The Hill, as it now enters a new phase, and they're, I guess, having another debate. I guess another beat-up Joe Biden session is going to happen, but we'll watch that happen with glee. But anyway, so you got 10 candidates debating each night. And Biden obviously had a bad first debate, but he's promising he's going to be a lot more aggressive in this one. I'm not going to be as polite this time, he says. And, you know, Trump being Trump, you know, I could see him live tweeting the thing, and it's going to be hilarious, Kaylee.
Yeah, it will. You know, I'm here in Detroit right now with some other members of the campaign, and we are expecting to see the same radicalism we saw when we were down in Miami, when every single candidate raised their hand, including Joe Biden, for taxpayer-funded health care for illegal immigrants. And look, you know, America needs to understand that this economy is reversible. I was just out at the Michigan GOP headquarters, and they were telling me how there's going to be $15 billion in investment in the city between Ford and GM and Fiat Chrysler. Well, that's reversible, and it's certainly reversible with the Green New Deal, which Kamala Harris is now co-sponsoring part of with AOC. So if you don't want AOC to be the de facto speaker, which she is, think about the idea of her being the de facto president, because it doesn't matter if it's Biden or if it's Kamala, you've got President AOC calling the shots.
All right, let's go to where we are as it relates to the poverty in all these big cities. I've been talking at length, you know, our special traveling correspondent, Lawrence Jones. Well, we had to send him out to Nancy Pelosi's district a couple of times because we didn't even believe what we saw the first time. And that was, well, people are urinating in the streets. They're defecating in the streets. Feces all over the place. Needles are everywhere. This is 1 mile from the gated community where Nancy Pelosi lives, 1 mile in the other direction, and you've got Nancy Pelosi's office. And right there in the middle, you've got people shooting up drugs, dropping their needles, going to the bathroom in the middle of the street. No facilities for anybody to use, and nobody's lifting a finger to help these people that are in desperate need of help. And I would assume, well, maybe people would want to do that, especially because they're so compassionate as liberals. Now we see the same thing happening in L.A. And then as I went in great detail last night on the issue of what's happening in Baltimore, it is an unmitigated disaster, Jeff Lord. All of them big liberal cities, all of them claim to have the greatest amount of compassion. And if you really break it down a little more simply, I don't think anyone wants to be in any detention center. But Griff Jenkins went down to one of the biggest one at the border. And let's see, they had soccer fields and recreational opportunities and basketball and computers and phones and food and water and medicines and medical attention and baby formula and mattresses and blankets and pillows, and people weren't killing each other. So I think I'd rather, if I had a choice, Baltimore and these neighborhoods or the detention center, where everyone says it's like a concentration camp, I think I'd choose the detention center under the current conditions.
Absolutely. The president has an unerring ability to shine a spotlight on things that have been visible, if undiscussed, for decades. And the cities you mentioned, I mean, I think the last Republican mayor of Baltimore was a guy, I think I'm right, was a guy named Theodore McKeldin in the, 50, 60, 70 years ago, something like that. GOP mayors and some of these other places, I mean, they just haven't existed. The Democratic Party and, more to the point, liberalism has run these cities, and they've run them into the ground. And this whole deal with Baltimore is an excellent opportunity to focus attention. When you talk about the Green New Deal and all this, this is just more of the same kind of stuff that's been going on in these cities and impoverished them.
All right, so let's look at, you know, the way the media mob works. And you are probably two of the most battle-weary individuals I know, having survived fake news CNN. They can't even, by the way, they cannot even break a million in any 1 hour of their telecast on any given day. They don't even get a million viewers in any 1 hour. That means prime time. I mean, it's shocking. I wouldn't have a job. I would have been fired a long time ago if I had those despicable numbers. Anyway, it's either Russia, 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 collusion, 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 stormy, 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 S-hole, S-hole, S-hole. You guys lived through this. It was always 10, 12, 15, 20 to 1, you know, 20 liberals, 20 leftists versus Kaylee, or 20 leftists versus Jeff. And I would, you know, try to help Jeff out and text him a couple of lines. I think you might have used a couple of them occasionally, and because it was so fundamentally unfair. And now it's racist, 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 because Donald Trump told the truth, truth, truth about how horrible it is in some cities that have been Democratic controlled and run for decades. And personally, how people can say that, well, that compare the detention centers to concentration camps, when then fix your own city first, then tell us how to fix the detention centers, or at least vote to pay for more money for the detention centers.
That's right. But, you know, CNN, they conceal the truth, Sean. You know, there's a whole bunch of lies. I've seen it. Jeff's seen it. They hid the Hillary Clinton email scandal. Now they're hiding the biggest scandal in modern political history with the dossier and the spying on American citizens. And they hide the issues that matter, like the residents of Baltimore suffering in a corrupt mayor who had to resign, Catherine Pugh, because she was bringing in hundreds of thousands of dollars for her book as her residents suffered and she resigned. There's always a corrupt liberal politician not too far away. But CNN conceals it. They hide it from their viewers, and their ratings tell the story. And people are clicking and saying, I want to see the truth, and I'm not getting it on this channel that's hiding it each and every day.
Sean, I bet Kaylee's had this experience. You have no idea how many people stop me from time to time to say that they no longer watch CNN because we're not on it. And it is astounding. And Jeff Zucker personally thanked me and said how great we were and what a boost we were to CNN, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they're going down this path, and I frankly think at this point their liberalism is more important to them than the network. And they're just going to play it all out. And, you know, you're against them nightly, beating their brains in by a lot. And they're just going to continue down this path, which, you know, fine by me.
Well, no, I mean, I don't really care what they do. And if they think that this is going to draw big numbers, now it probably will do a little bit better, I imagine, because it's something different. And I assume there might be a slight appetite out there for whether or not any of these 2020 contenders are going to fight. I mean, but I still think it's coming down to crazy, creepy, sleepy Uncle Joe and Kamala Harris, who Jeff Zucker apparently endorsed once.
Yeah.
And then we've got, you know, crazy Bernie, and we got Elizabeth Warren, one 1,024th herself, who's lied on numerous occasions. And I'm just guessing that that's not going to work out very well for the Democratic Party, because the question of are you better off than you were 4 years ago should be prominent. Kaylee McEnany.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to work out for the Democrat Party. And look, Sean, this fact tells you all you need to know. We at the campaign were just, startled to see that image of all those hands going up for taxpayer-funded health care. Well, now the hand-raising questions for tonight are eliminated. CNN has agreed with the Democrats. We will not ask you any hand-raising questions, because they know if they raise their hands for their liberal policies, it exposes that AOC runs the party, and that will be rejected by America all day. So no hand-raising questions tonight.
All right, got to take a break. We will come back more with Kaylee McEnany and our good friends. Well, they're both good friends. Jeff Lord, 800-941-SEAN. We have an amazing Hannity tonight you're going to love. We'll tell you about that. We'll get to the phones on the other side of this.
They're coming for it. Our money. Money that belongs to us, that our families depend on. But socialists in Congress have a scheme to take our money and use it to pay for their political campaigns, even personal expenses and negative TV ads. Up to $5 million for every candidate, every election. And every House Democrat supported it. This isn't the old Democratic Party. It's a new radical socialist party. Their self-serving plan could cost us billions. Money that won't be spent to educate our kids, care for our veterans, or fix our crumbling roads and bridges. They're assaulting not just our money, but our way of life. Call this plan what it is, theft. But there's time to fight back. Call the Democrats. Tell them to fund their own campaigns and put the people first. NRCC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Senator Warren, you signed on to Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan. It would put essentially everybody on Medicare and then eliminate private plans that offer similar coverage. Is that the plan or path that you would pursue as president?
So, yes, I'm with Bernie on Medicare for All. There are a lot of politicians who say, oh, it's just not possible. We just can't do it. It's have a lot of political reasons for this. What they're really telling you is they just won't fight for it. Well, health care is a basic human right, and I will fight for basic human rights.
My goal is to ensure that every American is well enough to live to their full potential because they have health care. So getting to guaranteed, high-quality, universal health care as quickly and surely as possible has to be our goal.
Really what we're talking about is our objective, making sure that every single sick American in this country is able to get the health care that they need. I believe Medicare for All is the way to do that. I also think that employers will recognize how much money will be saved by supporting a Medicare for All program.
And so where I stand is very clear. Healthcare is not just a human right, it should be an American right. And I believe the best way to get there is Medicare for All.
I think we share the goal of universal healthcare. And the idea I put out there, the public option, which the governor was just talking about, this idea is that you use Medicare or Medicaid without any insurance companies involved. You could do it either way. And the estimates are 13 million people would see a reduction in their premiums. 12 more million people would get covered. So I think it is a beginning, and the way you start and the way you move to universal health care.
All right, there it is, a preview of coming attractions if America ever goes down this socialist pit that they want to take us. Look, I've said this before, I'll say it again. I understand there is a certain appeal because there's that people come along and they're going to take your fear away. There's a natural fear that is inherent in the human condition that any successful person, frankly, you've got to overcome. I mean, one time a person that I like, know, and admire said to me, fear is the opposite of faith. In other words, if you have a belief that there's a God and a creator that has a plan and that the word education, it comes from its proper derivative, which is the Latin educare, to bring forth from within. And you've got to believe that even in hard times and easy times and all times that, you know, if a God knows how many hairs are on your head and they're counted, and that you can't add a second to your life, and that everything is a gift, and you really of yourself do nothing except, you know, you try to do your part to serve other people, in as much as everybody goes to work, and work is healthy for the mind, body, and soul, and work means that you're serving other people. I mean, what? How do you make money? Yeah, making money is about providing goods and services that other people want, need, and desire. It's that simple. And based on, you know, how whatever your service happens to be, maybe it's very unique. Maybe you have an ability to protect people like Norton Security from ever being hacked and encrypting their phones from messages and emails, everything you send and receive. And for $3.33 a month, you go to norton.com/VPN, and there you go. You got it. And they'll secure every text you send. It's encrypted. Every text you receive, every email you send, every email you receive. All right, you're providing a service. All right, if you're a waiter, waitress, cook, whatever, you're providing a service. If you're a lawyer, you're providing a service. If you're a doctor, you're providing a service. If you're a police officer, you're there to serve and protect. You know, if you build a dishwasher or you build a washing machine, you're creating something that people want, need, and desire to make their lives easier. Remember the good old days, people put clothes out on a clothesline and you'd have to, you know, let your clothes dry that way. And before that, you were even washing your clothes, you know, on, you know, with one of those, I forget, what do you call that thing that you'd wash it on and scrub your clothes clean? And could you imagine having to spend all the time in your life doing all that extra work? Thank God there are smart people that came up with great inventions and ideas to make our lives easier. And then we go about doing bigger and better things with our time because we can buy a cheap washer and dryer and take care of our clothes, and it's not something we have to worry about. You put the clothes in, you put the soap in, you push the button, and boom, you're off doing your stuff. And then when you get back, you throw it in the dryer and you press the button, and when you come back, they're dry. You may have to fold them, but that's not that big a deal. Maybe you're like me and you just leave a big pile and you pick from the pile. It's kind of how I like to do. Why are you laughing? That's kind of what I like to do. But in one way, let's say you drive people. You're a driver. You're a taxi driver. You're a Uber driver. All right, you're providing a service for people, which I think is a great service, especially people if they're going to go out drinking. And they don't have to worry about driving drunk anymore. And they don't have to worry about having a designated driver. Everybody could have a couple of drinks, have a good time, have a dinner, and not worry that some cop's going to pull you over and you're going to get a DUI and he's going to haul you off to jail. And then your insurance goes up. You know, think of the services that doctors provide to save lives. It's amazing to me. Anyway, so that's the good part. But somebody comes along and says to you, it's free. We're going to provide we're going to take away every fear you have. All you need to do is vote for us. Trust us. Okay. Tell me what works. Tell me, when has this ever worked? Do you really want to live a stress-free life, and do you really want to put all your eggs in one basket, that the same people that provided Obamacare is nothing compared to the Green New Deal. Do you really want to put all of your eggs in a basket to take away fear that you're going to have a place to stay, you're going to have retirement, guaranteed job, guaranteed vacation, healthy food, we're going to retrofit everybody else's house, we're going to steal from the rich, we're going to give it to you because we're going to give the money back to the people that earned it. We're going to take from the rich people and give it to people that earned it. You want to live in that society? Do you believe those promises will be fulfilled? Or are these people that are making false promises, creating false hope of a false security that frankly are even going to rob you of your own dignity in life? I don't want to be dependent on anybody else as long as I live. I never have been financially independent since I'm 10. And that's not hyperbole. That's reality. When I dropped out of school the first time, my parents were apoplectic. They said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I didn't have any more money. And they were like, well, we will find the money. I'm like, no, we're not going to find the money. I'm going to go to work and then I'll go back after I make a little more money, which I did. Still never finished, but I didn't have time at that point. I started making too much money. You know, I had a contracting business. I had too much work and I liked working and I liked making money. And I liked the success of learning all of these trades just by doing them. Now, if we're going to do everything they say and we'll get rid of the lifeblood of our economy and Medicare for all and retirement for all and education for all, and we can look at the track record of these things and they've been a miserable failure. In other words, where liberals have been governing, like Baltimore, like Los Angeles, like San Francisco, Chicago, New York, it's never worked out the way they say it's going to work out. The greatest example in modern history is keep your doctor, keep your plan, and save money. Millions lost their doctors, millions lost their plans, and everybody paid a lot more money. And there's many, many towns and cities in America, you only have one choice when it comes to health care. And it's not the greatest choice. And there are so many other better ideas. James is in Baltimore. James, hi. How are you? Welcome to the program. WCBN, our great affiliate there. What's happening?
Well, I just wanted to call to say that I agree with all the things I've been hearing about Baltimore. And for that reason, I'm leaving. In fact, I'm in the midst of leaving right now. It took me 6 years to sell my house. And
where are you going to? By the way, you're not the only one. They've lost hundreds of thousands in terms of population in the last couple of decades. I mean, people are leaving just like they're leaving New York, New Jersey, Illinois, and California. They're leaving. People can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I have no friends or family living in the city anymore. But I'm not going too far. I'm moving into Baltimore County because I still have family in Maryland and so forth. But I also wanted to say that when Elijah Cummings talks about how well-educated his district is, I think people should take a look at his district because the large chunk of it is Baltimore City, but somehow or another, it's extended into Howard County, Maryland, which, if you know about it, is one of the most listed as one of the best places to live in the country because of the educational attainment, you know, the amenities and so forth there. And those are the people he's talking about. He's not talking about the bulk of people who live in his district, the section of his district, which is most of Baltimore City. And I think he needs
to... Look, I just happen to like Baltimore. For example, my mother grew up in the South Bronx where the Yankees play. I happen to like going to Yankee games. I don't get there very often because I work too much. But, I mean, I do like going there for games. And one of the things that I always liked about it is the atmosphere. You know, people that are residents in and around Yankee Stadium are really smart. They're there. They're selling T-shirts and caps and memorabilia and food and water and Cokes or whatever you wanted to drink. I mean, they're great. I love that entrepreneurship. Then they have lots that are near where Yankee Stadium is. You can park a little cheaper if you're willing to walk a little longer. And they're charging to make money that way. I love people that are thrifty and smart and do what they have to do to make money, because that's pretty much the story of my entire family and pretty much the story of my life. And the same with Baltimore. I mean, I've been there. I've been where the Orioles play, and I like it there too. But
Baltimore is my hometown. My family has been here since the 1860s, and so I feel almost as if I've been pushed out. But really, living here is untenable. And I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. I mean, there are things here worth seeing, but not worth your life.
Listen, to have a successful city, you have to first start with policing. Look, if I was going to go into Baltimore and the first thing I needed to do, I would have the heaviest police presence in the neighborhoods that most need it. I don't know what the name of the neighborhood is. Whatever it is, wherever the violence is happening is where you go. And that's what Rudy Giuliani did in New York City. And then he changed the lifestyle. I mean, look, you couldn't walk down. When I was a kid, and me and my buddies, Gomez and everybody, we'd go to New York City. And, you know, my parents shouldn't have let us go, to be very blunt, but we went anyway. And, you know, you couldn't walk 10 feet in and around Times Square and 42nd Street without being approached by somebody trying to sell you drugs or some hooker trying to pull you into some, you know, brothel that's there or some sex show that's going on. I mean, that's all it was. Rudy cleaned it up, was called the racist the whole time he was cleaning it up. But then we started saving a couple of thousand lives a year, and through tough policing measures and stop and frisk and other measures, we were able to make the city safe again, taking guns away from those that had no business carrying guns and knives and weapons, and pushing out the gangs and incentivizing people that would build a better New York, better businesses. And now Times Square, you know, you can take your kids there late at night. You're probably not going to have a problem. All right, well, watch out for pickpockets. Don't look up. They'll know you're a tourist. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Why is it that every big liberal city gets destroyed by liberal policies? Wait till you see the tape we have, the examples we have, and then see all of this through the prism of every 2020 Democratic hopeful. Well, they are pushing things that are even worse. That's all coming up tonight, 9 Eastern on Hannity. Lawrence Jones, Jesse Waters, Lisa Booth, 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox News.